Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. This morning's show is going to be one that is really targeted toward archers, and I don't think I get a chance to do enough shows that are really focusing on archery. My guest this morning is Kenny Isringhausen, and I hope I said that right, Kenny.
Yes, you did. Yes,
good.
You did. You got it.
How are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Rick, how you doing?
We're good. Winter made her appearance last night. We had about an inch of snow. So I'm chomping at the bit to get out in the timber and start looking at fresh sign, you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, let's start out with I've introduced the show as being for archery, and then off-air just before the show, or I should say before the show, but Tristan and I were talking on the Mugs in the Morning segment about the show, and I mentioned that it was really going to be one for archers to listen to, and I know you're an avid archer, so how did you get into the sport?
I got into it as a kid. My dad brought home a bow from some kind of a gun deal that he did, just an old pine recurve, and he was going to get into archery and, you know, being a busy man and stuff, he just never got to it. But being a young man, you know, young kid, that just fascinated me. I wanted to try it out. Mm-hmm. And finally, I talked him into letting me use it in the backyard. And he just thought it was going to be a fad, you know. Oh, he'll get tired of it and quit. Well, I never quit.
Little did he know.
Yeah, I've been doing it ever since. I'm 56 now, so I've been doing it, you know, pretty well all my life.
Do you have any little brothers?
No, I have two older brothers.
Okay, well, little brothers make great targets.
I bet they move fast.
My brother can attest to that, yes. What really attracted you to archery? Why did you want to do it?
Well, first the fascination of just shooting a bow. I mean, just something that was new. But then I, you know, realized that you could actually go out and hunt for 90 days instead of the 6 days of gun season we had back then.
Right.
And back then, in the 70s, a lot of people, whitetails were new to our area. No one knew that much about them. And just being able to get out there and hunt them for 90 days is what got me going, because, you know, like I said, it was a new thing. No one knew what was going on with them. They didn't know patterns. They didn't understand anything about them, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty well just self-taught, because everybody was learning together.
One of the things that initially fascinated me about archery, as well as rifle shooting too, is being able to take whatever you're pushing down range and get it to go where you want it to go accurately. The physics involved in that was just what attracted me in both. But now, you know, knowing when you started archery, you know, we're talking you know, bare broadheads, you know, pretty primitive.
No bow shops. No one. The only people that I knew back then was my mother had a cousin, the very close cousin of hers that was bow hunting. Other than that, no one was really doing it. As a matter of fact, when I started, I had a little motorcycle, and I went around and asked all the neighbors if I could get permission to hunt on their ground, and they thought it was funny. And sure, they gave me permission. They just thought it was cute. So this kid was running around with a stick trying to shoot a deer, you know, and a lot of them was like, well, if you get one, let us see it. That was pretty well it. And I had Rome of probably about 5,000 acres where I could just go anywhere I wanted to.
Yeah, that's very good. So, you know, starting out with, you know, the equipment that I can visualize you having, when did you get to the point that you went, you know, I can make a better tip for a hunting arrow? What triggered that?
Well, I went through the progression of getting a compound, you know, some of the first ones, it was a whopping 160, 170 feet per second, all the way up to the new equipment. And, you know, I've tried every broadhead out there. I'm a bow hunter like the rest of you guys. I've tried all kinds of different broadheads, fixed, mechanical, you know, try some, like some, don't like some other ones, you know, whatever. And actually what started this in 2008, I had a mechanical quote-unquote fail. Was it the broadhead's fault? Not really, after really looking at it. It was just a one-in-a-million shot that I hit the scapula and it didn't open into the deer. It actually opened on the outside of the deer. And then after that, I decided, you know, like everybody else, my mechanical failed, so I'm going to go back to fix broadheads, you know.
Right.
And I have a business and has a parts catalog, and I was shutting down my machines one night. And I actually, I don't know if anyone is familiar with a step-down drill bit, but it's a cone.
Right.
Is what it looked like.
Yep.
And
for making multiple size holes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what... So there's the dawn of my first broadhead, because I looked at that and I thought, man, that would be an awesome broadhead, right?
Yeah.
You can make a hole. And I went outside to turn off my machines, and I took about three steps, and the vision of my ring broadhead popped into my head, and I thought, I can do that. I know I can do that. A little background on me: I'm a farm boy, grew up as a farm boy, went to college, I got a chemistry degree, a lot of physics behind me, math. I'm one of those people that want to tear everything apart and find out how it works and why it works. That's just my nature.
Uh-huh.
I look at things as like, wow, that's cool. How'd that work? So anyway, with that, I came home, drew everything out so I wouldn't forget it. And then the great asset that I have is my middle brother, who also bow hunts, is a machinist. Has been most of his adult life.
That's handy.
That really comes in handy, yes. So I went to him and I tried to, you know, I explained it to him, and we finally made some prototypes and went out in 2009 and started shooting deer ourselves. And the very first deer we killed with it, we knew we had something totally different, because all the years of bow hunting, we've never had deer go down that fast. As a matter of fact, the night that he killed, my brother killed the first deer with the ring broadhead.
Now,
and
I dropped
him off and went down the holler a little bit farther. And by the time I got up on my tree, he called me. Now, if you know my brother, he never calls during, it's radio silence. He won't even text you. He's calling me, and he killed one. He said, I'm done. And you know, I was like, well, I'll come over and help you track it. He goes, nope, don't worry about it. She's right here in front of me. I'm like, what? He goes, yep, she's laying 40 yards down the trail.
I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday who is an archer, and I had showed him both of the blades that you had sent me, and he is totally intrigued with the ring broadhead and wanted to know if that flew the same way, you know, for the same weight point that you put in there. On any other one. And I told him, I said, I'll ask that question, but I got to assume that they do.
yeah, absolutely. When we developed the wearing broadhead, like I said, I come up with the idea in 2009. We played around with it for a couple of years, and then we started to make it kind of try to make it cool and put it out on the market. At first, it didn't fly right.
Was it planing due to the ring, you think?
Well, honestly, I still don't know why it didn't work, but we went back to the original one. It worked just fine.
Okay.
And actually, that ring, so the whole concept of the ring broadhead is to make a one-inch hole, not three slices, not four slices, not two or whatever. It's actually take a cone, a hole, and core that animal out. So what you're doing is you're making a one-hole cylinder, a one-inch hole cylinder through that whole deer. Well, you're taking all that material out. What the ring does is it also acts as a stabilizer. The reason it's two-thirds of the way back on the broadhead is because that is the optimum place to put it, so that if you have any airfoils that are coming over that tip or issues with your setup and stuff, that ring will actually compensate and become a stabilizer.
Okay.
That little broadhead, if I could film it, would shoot straight as far as you wanted to throw it. And, you know,
pretty
intriguing. 100 yards, no problem. 300 yards, if you could film it, no problem.
So you got from this point where you and your brother are kind of negotiating with how to put these things together. And then how did Fire in the Hole come to be? A little history on the company.
Well, Fire in the Hole came about because we, you know, if you're going to get into this, in about 2015, we decided we were going to start marketing them nationally. So you had to come up with a name for the company.
Right.
Well, my son at the time was 12 years old and was setting out dove hunting. And I told him, I said, Dad's been running around trying to think, you know, running stuff through his head, trying to come up with a name for a broadhead company. And we tried this and we tried that. And all of a sudden we're sitting there and he's kind of quiet. And he looks at me and he goes, Fire in the Hole. I'm like, what? He goes, name it Fire in the Hole. Get it? Red? Hole? Red? I'm okay. Like, oh. Oh, that okay. Yeah, that'll work. We can do that. I was like, that's pretty good. Well, 12-year-old kid is what come up with the name of the broadhead company.
And what are his royalties?
He gets free broadheads. How's that?
Free broadheads, room and board. Yeah. Enjoy
yeah,
it, kid.
My son is very spoiled because he's never shot any of the other broadheads and stuff, and he thinks, God bless him, but he thinks that deer go down at 30 yards all the time. If they run past 30 yards, he starts getting worried.
Mm.
He just killed one a few weeks ago, and it was a liver shot with the 4-inch. It went 70 yards, and he was really freaked out because that buck ran out of his sight, and he was nervous that he didn't hit it right. I said, you're fine. It's down. We just got to go look for it a little bit.
I know that ring blade, and we talked about this, prior to the show, but it looks like the deer looks like it's hit with a slug out of a shotgun. And you said, yeah, 10-gauge slug. And
absolutely.
That's a pretty massive.
You can take that ring and slide it right down over top of a 10-gauge shot shell.
That's a massive hole. That's going to leave a blood trail.
Well, but the other thing that it really does physically to the deer is as soon as you hit it, they lose all blood pressure. And because the blood tries to go to that hole and clot. You're not clotting a 1-inch hole because the material is gone.
Right.
And that's what people miss is it's a clean hole all the way through the animal. I mean, if you shoot a heart or if you heart shot a deer or lung shoot it, when you get it, there'll be a clean hole all the way through that vital. And everything's gone, and they can't survive that. Not even if you just hit one lung; it's a dead deer.
Now I noticed that you make your broadheads to fit both traditional style bows and crossbows. From an engineering, machining, manufacturing standpoint, is there a lot of difference in how you do it?
No, it's actually the same. The same broadhead will cover compound or crossbow on both models. There is no difference in it. I don't get into the making of different things or different, bow or crossbow. To me, if you make it solid enough to stand up to a crossbow, it's going to work on a compound.
Yeah, because it's a lot slower.
So
it should.
So just make the best you can and stand up to the crossbow, and you should have no problem on the compound. Now, I do have different cards because there's so many people that think that you need two different broadheads for a compound and a crossbow. Now, with other people's broadheads, I can't speak to that. Maybe there is difference, but on my two models, there isn't. There's no difference whatsoever.
Now, the other broadhead I looked at, and actually one of the first ones I saw that led me to you as far as getting you on the show, was the Slang Blade, and that was such a unique looking concept. I wanted you to tell us about that one and how that came to be.
That came to be because when I was making the ring broadhead and getting out there, I ran across all kinds of people that said, oh, I like your idea for the ring broadhead. That's great. That's cool. But I shoot mechanical. Can you come up with a mechanical? And, I mentioned it to my brother. Everyone's wanting mechanicals. I said, well, let's make one. So we did make one before this, and it was a 2.25-inch. It had some cool things about it, but it wasn't I didn't think it was something that would really grab everyone's attention. I mean, we killed hogs with it. It worked very well, but I was just like, I want something more. I want something that's really, that will match the ring in its killing power. I also have a patented bow fishing tip, and by playing around with that, we made comments several times, boy, if we could make that a broadhead, that would be really cool, because it's over 3 inches wide.
And the slang blade is a 4-inch spread, right?
Yes. Well, what happened was whenever I finally got the concept in my head and figured out how to do this, the 4-inch, and when I say 4-inch, everyone goes, oh, my God, it's such a big broadhead. How's it fly? No, it's not really not. It doesn't fly at 4 inches, guys. You can't do that. It actually flies at 7/8 of an inch. Take your fingers and make a peace sign. Okay?
Okay.
That's your broadhead. That's what it is. It is two knife blades put on a field tip. That's what it is. These blades are 50 thousandths thick, 200 thousandths wide. They weigh a little shy of 35 grains apiece. They're small knife blades. They're tough. They're rigid. They're big. But they're small so that they will stab. They stab into the animal. They don't cut into the animal. They cut. And they stab in and cut out to the side. They're designed, there's an angle on the front of the blade that is designed, because that was, I worked with that for quite a while to get the right angle, so that when it hits, it's going to hit at 7/8 of an inch. It's going to start opening immediately on the side of the animal. And by the time it comes in the back chest wall, it's going to be about 1.25 inches wide. But with the action that I have on it, the blades are already going to be fully open when it hits that first vital at 4 inches.
Man,
and then it goes right through your vitals at 4 inches and out the other side.
It is
absolutely devastating.
Another thing that impressed me when I was reading through and then talking with you afterwards was I can use that on my bows. I like more traditional recurves, longbows, and they're a lot slower than what normally takes a mechanical. That's great.
But remember what I told you. It hits at 7/8 of an inch. So you're shooting a 7/8 inch broadhead is what you're doing. Okay? And by stabbing in instead of cutting in, you are retaining almost all of your kinetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
Every other broadhead on the market, every other mechanical broadhead on the market has to cut on the front side. Mine doesn't. It stabs and cuts. There's a difference whenever you're stabbing something. Take a knife and just hold it up to something and push it, you know, sideways into an animal or a box or whatever, and you'll see that there's a lot of resistance there. Now turn it around and stab it into there, and it's a whole different ballgame. All I did was take the idea of trying to, because you can't hit an animal with 4 inches of blade up front and retain any kind of kinetic energy. It's just not going to work.
No, it's going to, it's
so I had
too
to
much
have a
surface
way to
area there.
That as much as possible. Do what, Rick?
I said that's like too much surface area there to push through.
Yeah, there's too much surface area. Yeah, you can't do that. You.
Well, that answers one of the other questions I had. When I'm sitting there, got a nice broadside shot at a deer with one of these slang blades, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking, how does this thing get by the rib cage? You know, they're going to be spread out, but they don't. They're spreading out after it's penetrated.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Everyone's like, "Oh, are you worried about bone?" No, I want you to hit a rib. I really do. I want you to hit a rib on the way in. Because that's going to open it faster. You know, I mean, it opens it. And it, the remember me going back and telling you the blades are like small knife blades?
Yep.
Okay. That model, that design has cut through every bone on a whitetail's body. And when I say every bone, I mean it will completely cut through. It has completely cut through the front leg bone, the spine, the brisket, and the back leg bone, which impresses me. To no end.
It's
a lot of force to go through a big bone like that. But those blades will cut through that. One of the reasons is they are beveled blades. They are single beveled blades. And the reason I had to do that was you have to have a cutting surface over top of your ferrule. Even though the ferrule is just a little small 26, 27 grain ferrule.
Right.
you still have to have a cutting surface over that. What most people miss about this design is there's a round radius on the bottom of the blade that is sharp. So when they come together, when they rotate, they actually make a cutting point over top of the ferrule. That's how we're able to go through bone so easy.
Okay.
So the whole surface of that 4-inch, once it's open, is cutting from one tip to the other.
We have gone through this so quickly this morning. It's been so much fun. I got two final quick questions, if you can squeeze them in, because we only got a few seconds. Number one, where can people find Fire in the Hole products here in Nebraska? And if there's not a lot of spots, can you order them off the website?
Yes, you can get them on the website, F-I-R-E-N. Take the I out of the letter, the word N, FIRENTHEHOLE.com. If your search input broadheads behind it, comes right up. The other place you can get them is on Amazon.
Okay.
I sell them all day long on Amazon.
Very good. Kenny, I thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. I hope some people give you a call and check them out.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.